Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than Wales National County's all-rounder, a member of Glamorgan's victorious 2021 RLODC winning side, Mr. Stephen Rheingold. So Steve, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Lovely to be here. Lovely to chat cricket. It's always nice. My day so far has been lovely. On the back of playing at Lords yesterday, I'm still a bit on a buzz from that. So, been lovely. I'm back home in London at the moment, so with my family. Which is very nice for a change. And obviously, yeah, can't top playing at Lords yesterday, so I'm very good.
Brilliant here, Stephen. Absolutely fantastic. And before we get into the main content of the podcast, which will be your journey in the county circuit, and we do have to have a major discussion about that incredible campaign in 2021. You mentioned about playing at Lords. What was that like? What was it like stepping out onto the hallowed turf for the very first time?
I mean, amazing, incredible. Anything you'd ever wish for as a cricketer to start the morning. I mean, first of all, the weather was perfect. That's the first thing. Just that's a tick box that you need. And then walking across the field in the morning just to go and have a hit on the nursery ground and have a bowl there. That's spectacular. One of the best training facilities you could have in the country. And then, yeah, to bat first, open the batting with Paul Sterling, which was lovely as well. So just have a chat with him about cricket and sort of start a little partnership with him at the top was lovely. Very nice.
Lucky for some, eh? Lucky for some, yeah. Of course. Paul Sterling, Warwickshire's new signing as well for the T20 Blast. So it must have been nice to go out there and bat with someone so incredibly talented at the game of cricket like Sterlow is. And I believe the MCC won, didn't they, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, we did, yeah. We did.
Always a bonus.
Exactly, yeah.
Goodness me. Well, I'll tell you what, Stephen, what a week it is then. And again, topping off that week with a nice appearance on the County Cricket Podcast Day on Good Friday. Not the worst way to spend your week at all. And in terms of the podcast today, listeners, basically the content will just be Stephen's cricketing journey to date. We will, of course, touch upon that incredible 2021 Royal London One Day Cup campaign with Glamorgan. And then we'll wrap things up with a discussion about the psychological aspects associated with the game of cricket. But Steve, before we get into all of that good stuff, I want to transport you all the way back to the origin of your cricketing journey, if I may. What were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this sensational game?
Yeah, it's a good question. My first memories would be here in London at my home club, Stanmore, watching my dad play on a Saturday club cricket, running around the field with my brother. We'd go on at tea and lunch and every opportunity we could give someone a tennis racket. And we'd say, oh, let me go and run over there and will you just hit me some balls, please, so I can catch and throw. And those are my first memories. And the actual cricket wise, probably my first memory under 10s, I would say, trialing for Middlesex. I had a stinker. I had an absolute stinker under 10. I think I was ill. I wasn't very well. And just the worst net you could ask for. I had a terrible trial and didn't make it. And I remember the letter coming through the post. Not making Middlesex under 10s, and I was gutted, like really, really gutted. That's probably my first memory. And then I got in under 11s and stayed in all the way up until the second team, really. So that's kind of my first memory that really stands out.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, it's a lovely journey into the game. It really is. I always like it on the podcast. When you do have that family influence, it's almost like the next generation carrying the torch almost. In a cricketing sense, and very much London-based then, in terms of those earliest ventures into the game of cricket. And in those most formative of years, aside from your family, Who did you look up to in the world of cricket itself? Did you have any role models, any idols, icons, influences that you tried to emulate your game on in those most earliest of years?
Yes, that's a great question. So I was born in South Africa, and I've always supported South Africa in pretty much any sport. So my first idol, I would say, was Jacques Kallis. I just obviously loved the way he just went about his business, and I wasn't a seamer at the time, but I loved watching him. And the next one was probably Graham Swann. Watching him bowl, obviously not South African, but as an idol, trying to mould my off spinners to him, pretty much as a base, as a foundation, trying to mould towards him and learn off him. That was probably my next person I'd look up to, I would say.
Well, I'll tell you what, both very, very nice choices. Jacques Kallis, the greatest all-rounder of all time, in your opinion, Steve. I mean, some people might say the great Sir Garfield Sobers, and you'd be well within your right to say so, but in my opinion, I don't think I've ever seen anyone so dominant as Jacques Kallis.
Absolutely, yeah. He's got to be up there. Got to be up there.
He most certainly does. Third all-time leading test run scorer as well in men's cricket. Absolutely staggering cricketer, to say the least. And Graham Swann, England's best off-spinner, at least in the modern generation. I mean, again, older fans, you might say Derek Underwood. There is some debate there. I think Underwood probably would be better in terms of stats, but Graham Swann did produce some absolutely sensational deliveries and spells as England's frontline spinner in the Test arena. And talking of spin bowling, I need absolutely no excuse to pick up the conversation there as a spinner myself, or I should say a slow bowler. Steve, why did you choose to become an off-spinner? Why didn't you become a seam bowler, especially if your idol at that time was Jacques Kallis?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm pretty sure when I was under 10 and I didn't make that Middlesex side, I was a seamer. And I think I changed to be an off-spinner at under 11s. I'm not sure how it came about, but my dad's always been a left-arm off-spinner. That might have had an influence. My brother was a leg spinner. He was 2 years older than me at the time. We'd always net together. That maybe had an influence. And I'm not the tallest of blokes, so maybe it just made sense at the time just to become an off spinner.
Fair enough. I mean, again, I can respect that as someone who loves the art of spin bowling. I mean, I love off spin, and I do think in this country we do need to change our attitudes and approach to spin bowlers. I think we need to be a little bit more forgiving of off spinners at times, because you are going to get tonked sometimes. It's part and parcel of the role. But at the same time, when you look at the best spinners on the planet, both off spinners and leg spinners, they can massively influence the trajectory of any game of cricket across all three formats. So yeah, I've always had a great and healthy respect for the art of spin bowling. And I have to ask, Stephen, what's your favorite aspects of the art form?
Well, it's got to be visualizing my best ball. I actually bowled pretty close to one of my best balls yesterday at Lord's, which was nice. Just to a right-hander, getting it up and down through the gate and knocking the stumps over. That's got to be something that I keep in mind every single time I bowl. I'm looking to sort of bowl that ball. And there's nothing better in my mind than actually doing it. The satisfaction of getting the ball up and down and ripping it between the gate is one of my favourite things in cricket. So
it is good, isn't it? And that's what I love about spin bowling. It's that ability to make the opposition look a bit silly at times if they misread it, or if they try and absolutely cart you outside of the ground, they miss it, goes onto the stumps and you get the wicket. There isn't a greater feeling, to be honest. Maybe seam bowlers out there, they might say a cartwheeling off stump, or, you know, sending the stumps absolutely splattering. But yeah, for spinners, it is that deception. It's deceiving the batter and making them look a little bit foolish. That is what's so satisfying about the art form itself. And Steve, picking up the conversation then about county cricket, because you mentioned already that trial with Middlesex, which unfortunately, the first one at least, didn't quite go to plan. But aside from Middlesex, did you have any kind of other ventures into county cricket, or was it just the Saxes? Did you try your hand with any other counties, any other teams? Were your eyes always set on Middlesex County Cricket Club in those early years?
Yeah, I mean, early years definitely just set on Middlesex pretty much. I didn't really know anything else. I was obviously at school here in London. All my cricket was here. So I was playing at Stanmore Cricket Club. So I was completely based within Middlesex. And it was only kind of when I was deciding what uni to go to that I would then venture out to Cardiff and try and make it at Glamorgan. And that was the next sort of venture. And I haven't really thought about anything else, trialing here and there maybe, but it's kind of been, I was in London and then I was in Cardiff. So that's kind of how it's been so far.
So quite a linear journey in terms of county cricket then. It's gone from Middlesex to Glamorgan, but we say linear, there has been a slight detour, hasn't there, with the Welsh National Counties, actually, who you represented last year. You're going to be representing them again this summer. How did you first get involved with the team itself? You know, was there any trial for that? How did you actually get involved in playing national county cricket in Wales?
I've been in Cardiff. I think this is my fifth year now in Cardiff. And my first 3 years, I was traveling back to play club cricket in London. And then last year, I decided to play club cricket in Cardiff. And you can only play for Wales if you play club cricket in Wales. So that's how it works. So I couldn't play the first 3 years. No one really knew who I was on that scene. And then obviously started playing for Glamorgan and had a nice summer last summer. And well, the 2 summers ago in the second team. And I'm quite friendly with the Wales coach now. He works a lot with me. And he asked if I'd be keen to join the Wales setup, and I was like, well, absolutely, definitely. A lot of the boys I'm friends with just through playing cricket in Wales. And the setup is brilliant. The coaching and the guys and the environment, I love it. So it was quite an easy decision to just jump on board as early as I could.
Well, that will put a nice smile on the face of my Welsh co-host, Lucy. Unfortunately, she's not here today. She's too busy working, funnily enough, in London now. But she does love Glamorgan, loves cricket in Wales as well. And if I'm not mistaken, Steve, don't you play for Neath in South Wales?
Yes. So I did play for Neath last summer. I won't be playing there this summer. Yeah, because there's not so much going on for me now at Glamorgan. So it didn't really make sense for me to play club cricket in Wales. So I thought, and my brother's first team captain here for the first time at Stanmore, and my dad is still playing as well. So I thought I'm going to have to play for them this season. They're in the Premier League this year. They got promoted last year. So hopefully contribute with them.
Well, I think that smile which was on Lucy's face has now been well and truly wiped off now that you're no longer playing for Neath. Goodness me. Fair play, though. Fair play. I suppose you've got to do what's best for you in terms of your cricketing journey. And of course, you have got that family influence and that family connection. So more than makes sense to play for Stanmore in 2022. But heading back to the Welsh National Counties, I suppose, before Glamorgan's, 2021 Royal London One Day Cup campaign got underway, you had the showcase game, didn't you, at Sophia Gardens. I have to ask, what are your memories of that day? Because Glamorgan actually lost that game in Cardiff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great memory because we had a good... So, I mean, like I said, Wales is a very, very good side, made up of guys that have played for Glamorgan, played for the twos, played for the ones, ex-pros... and we also had Lucas Carey, I'm pretty sure. So we had a great side. And we went up to play Glamorgan. It was their warm-up game before the Royal London. and we posted a decent total. Can't remember how much, or what did we chase? I can't remember. But either way, we played pretty well. It was a tricky wicket. I put on a partnership with Lorenzo Machado for quite, I think it was a decent partnership, nearing 100, maybe even more. And we beat them in their warm-up game, which was brilliant for us. We were, you know, obviously buzzing. And then the next thing you know, half of our team playing in Glamorgan's first game, the Royal London. I think it was me, Lucas, and Andy Gorvin. We all played for Wales on that day. We then played in the first Royal London game. I think it was against Warwickshire as well.
It was indeed, and we'll pick up the conversation about that game in a second, because obviously a very memorable debut and a fantastic game of cricket at Sapphire Gardens. But just one final thing about that time with the Wales National County side. I suppose heading into that summer of 2021, Steve, how important was that time in the National Counties in terms of your development as a player?
Oh yeah, massively. Massively. To have a platform where, you know, I wasn't playing MCCU. I was playing MCCU. But to have all these different platforms where you can perform and get noticed, and not just club cricket. I actually find club cricket harder than I find National Counties or MCCU, now UCCE. So I had these platforms. I had the minor counties. I scored some runs in a one-day game early on, which gave me confidence. I think that was against Bedfordshire. And then I was also playing MCCU at the time, and we won the one-day final for the MCCU against Oxford. I was 97, not out. We won the final. Again, more confidence going into one-day cricket. So these kind of different platforms have definitely helped me perform and helped me gain the confidence to actually go and do well in second team cricket and then do well in first team cricket as well. So well, yeah, huge benefit.
Well, that's great to hear. It really is. We do get that quite often here on the podcast, in particular with the MCCU as well, because it's a great first step before professional cricket. It's a fantastic almost taster of what you can expect. It's not quite the same level, of course. It's not. You can't replicate that at the university level. It's a great pathway into the game. It's a fantastic initial step. And then the National Counties, yet again, another great feeder system. We see players from the National Counties all over county cricket right now. I mean, just to name one example, Jake Lintott played for Wiltshire. He's now playing franchise cricket all around the world. It's fantastic. It really is. Mm-hmm. And in terms of your debut for Glamorgan, Steve, before we talk about the game, how did you find out that you're going to be representing Wales's only first-class county for the very first time? How did that opportunity present itself in the first place?
It's funny you ask. So I actually live with Kieran Carlson, who was captain at the time. And I was playing an MCC game in Bristol. It was about 10 minutes before we were due to start. And I got a phone call from him, and it was quite standard. You know, he's one of my friends. I live with him. And he said, Steve, I've got some news for you. I said, oh, right. What's wrong? What's going on? And he said, oh, you're in the squad for tomorrow for the first Royal London game. And I was shaking. I was literally shaking on the phone to someone who I consider a very close friend, who I, you know, I have loads of conversations with. It's not like I'm nervous around him or anything like that, but I was shaking, speaking to him. And I was like, oh my God, are you being serious? Or, you know, what do you mean? And he said, yeah, mate, you're in the squad for tomorrow. Just enjoy yourself and just try and relax. Don't go too hard in the MCC game today. Just try and, you know, take it easy and get your mind settled for tomorrow. So, you know, obviously buzzing. I actually went out to bat about 20 minutes later, and I was still shaking. And my mind, I couldn't focus on cricket, so I couldn't focus on that game. I ended up nicking off for a very low score because I wasn't focused. I wasn't in the game at all. I was too excited already. Oh yeah, absolutely buzzing.
I can imagine you were. I mean, it's a massive achievement, isn't it? When you think of your cricketing journey as well, it's been quite the unorthodox one in some ways. Well, initially South Africa. I know that wasn't so much in a cricketing capacity, but born in Cape Town, moved to London, played all your cricket there, been part of the Middlesex Academy and their setup. Then you moved to Cardiff. Then you play for the Welsh Minor Counties. And then all of that comes together in that game against Warwickshire at Sapphire Gardens. It's quite the pathway into the county circuit proper. And talking of that game, because Glamorgan actually won that by 2 wickets, a fantastic game of cricket, might I just add, against a very young Bears side who did put up a very good fight. But in terms of that day, Steve, what can you remember in terms of the performance, and what was your mindset like walking out to bat for the very first time as a Glamorgan player?
It's interesting you say it because I don't remember an awful lot. It's all kind of merged into a blur, but I do have some standout memories. So I arrived in the morning, and I arrived early. The DOC Mark Wallace had messaged me saying, "Steve, you need to do an ECG in the morning, so we can get your heart scans. It's a protocol or whatever for if you are going to play." So I didn't know I was playing yet. I was obviously in the squad. And so I had my ECG done in the morning by the club doctor, and he said, "You're going to have to do an ultrasound as well, an echo scan." So he's like, "Right, you're going to have to drive. Have you got a car?" So I was like, "Well, yes." Like, "What if I didn't have a car?" So he's like, "Okay, you're going to have to drive to Landock Hospital. And Neil is there waiting for your echo scan." So I said, "Right, okay." It's like 8:30 in the morning, obviously 11 o'clock start. And he was like, "Quick, go, Steve, what are you waiting for? Go." So I got in my car, I rushed to Landock Hospital, had my echo, ran around the hospital trying to find Neil, had my echo scan, and then jumped back in my car, rushed back. I parked in yellow zigzag lines because I was like, I'll take a 60 quid fine now. I don't care. I need to hurry up and get back. So I did, got back, put my stuff down in the changing room, went onto the field. All the boys were having a net, having a warm up, went onto the field, and I spoke to Kieran. I said, what's going on? Am I playing or what's the situation? So he took me to one side and he said, "Steve, you're going to play and you're going to bat at 3. So I was like, "Wow. Okay. Incredible. Amazing. I've never batted at 3 in my life." So I was like, three. Okay. Right. So I kind of worked out what my role was, and how I was sort of going to play it, what my mindset would be, and then lastly, just to enjoy it. I've been told so many times, don't let the environment build up. Just enjoy every minute. Be present. Just enjoy it. Don't get nervous. Or if you are nervous, use the nerves. It's good. It's exciting. So walking out to bat was just, I had those feelings in my head, just enjoy it. Enjoy walking down those stairs. Enjoy, wearing a yellow helmet. I'd made jokes over the last few years, like, "Oh, come on, give me a yellow helmet and a yellow Glamorgan helmet." And that morning I'd been given a helmet. So I was like really, really excited. Just the little things. Get given a one-day shirt and things like that. And one-day trousers and a yellow helmet and all these things, they meant so much to me. So I was just enjoying every moment, walking down the steps, just doing my own processes, what I normally do, and just taking it as a normal game when I get out to the crease. That was my mindset and my approach at the time.
I really like that, Steve. Again, the little things, something as small as, the colour of the helmet, for example, because you think of it, and it is an iconic look, isn't it? The yellow helmet of Glamorgan in the one-day cup stuff and the T20 blast. But again, just appreciate the little things and almost that sense of you only make one debut. Go out there, enjoy it, and express yourself. And in terms of the performance itself, do you remember your exact score? I've got it in front of me if you need a little bit of a hint. But do you remember exactly what you scored and who dismissed you?
I think I got 14 or 15. 15. I think I got caught mid-off. It wasn't a great shot, I don't think.
Spot on, yeah. 15 from 37 balls. Caught mid-off, dismissed by Manraj Johal, yeah, actually. Good young seam bowler to watch out for in this year's One Day Cup as well. But talking of Kieran, he was exceptional on that day, wasn't he? 60 from 67 balls. It was a low-scoring game in Cardiff. And actually, I do want to know this. How difficult was that surface to bat on? Because both sides did struggle at times, didn't they? In terms of the bounce, it was a little bit inconsistent and a bit low at times, shall we say.
Yeah, so we sort of knew that. You know, the Wales game was exactly the same thing. It was a tricky wicket. It's not flat. It's not a high scoring sort of. It wasn't a high scoring wicket last year at all. So it's kind of a get through a grind. Everyone chip in, and then hopefully, you know, someone comes off. And that was sort of my role. I think I played my role quite well, even though I didn't score too many runs. I averaged about 19 or 20. But my role was to sort of keep Kieran and Billy Root, who were our best middle-order batters, keep them from coming in, you know, 50 for three on a tricky wicket. That's exactly what we didn't want. And it could quite easily happen. So my role was, you know, it doesn't sound great, 15 off 37. But actually, then I give Kieran an opportunity to come in and, you know, play rather than come in and consolidate. So I was quite happy with my role doing that. I didn't have to be the aggressor. We had Nick Salmon and Hamish Rutherford up top. So me coming in on debut, you know, there's no real pressure. It's not, you know, I'm not expected to do big things. So I was just kind of focused on my role, and I thought, even though I didn't score too many runs or do anything extravagant, that was sort of my, you know, I sort of laid the foundation in a way, and I was quite happy with that. So, but yeah, Kieran and Billy played exceptionally well throughout the tournament. So, yeah.
They most certainly did. In particular, Kieran, and again, we'll mention his name with the final because that knock was absolutely superb. That 82 will live long in the memory of Glamorgan fans for generations to come. But talking on the flip side of that, we spoke about your off-spin earlier, actually, Steve. In last year's Royal London One Day Cup, not only did you score some runs, you also took your first ever List A wicket. Can you remember who it was?
No, I don't.
Do you want a clue?
Yes.
Used to play for Somerset, now plays for Glamorgan.
Eddie Byram.
Yep.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, I do remember that. Your first ever List A wicket. What was that like in terms of the feeling surrounding that as well? I mean, you've got that forever now. And you took one in the final as well, which we'll get on to. But what was that like to get off the mark in the professional game?
Yeah, incredible. Incredible. I haven't bowled. So like I said, when I was from under 11s, I've always been a bowler, predominantly a bowler. And for the last few years, I haven't really bowled because the Glamorgan second team are filled with spinners. You know, you've got Callum Taylor, you've got Prem Sisodia, Tegan Phillips. There's always bowlers. And because I'm an opening batter, I'm not a bowler. As you get pigeonholed, you kind of, not pigeonholed, but you become less of a priority to give you overs, if that makes sense. So I've not really bowled. And interestingly enough, I probably bowled more in the first team than I did in the second team. So getting given the ball was a real pleasure. Loved it. Loved bowling, especially to left-handers like Eddie. So that first wicket was huge. I think it was caught behind. And just buzzing. There's pictures of that and the celebrations and stuff. Just an incredible time that I will never forget.
Good to hear that, Steve. Really is. And you should be immensely proud of that as well. And talking to something which yourself and, to be honest, Glamorgan as a club should be immensely proud of. Let's talk about the final of the 2021 Royal London One Day Cup. And just to set the scene of this, this was Glamorgan's first ever chance of winning a one-day final. They'd never won it before 2021 in this style of setting, really. And they hadn't won a trophy since 2004, the Tote Sport Cup, under the leadership of the great Robert Croft. Before we get into the game itself, Stephen, what were the feelings like on that day? You've gone from playing club cricket, you've gone from playing national counties cricket. In that same season, you've made your professional debut for Glamorgan in the Leicester Day format. And all of a sudden, you're here in a major final, Glamorgan's first chance of silverware in 17 years. You've got the Sky Sports cameras as well. You've got a good contingent of Glamorgan fans who had made the trip from Wales to Nottingham. What were the feelings like ahead of that day when you entered Trent Bridge for the first time?
I mean, for me, when you saying that now, starting off playing club cricket at the start of the season and not, you know, with no real chance of playing first team, it doesn't sound real.
Yeah.
Walking into the stadium, obviously Trent Bridge, unbelievable stadium. Walking onto the field feels like a dome. Like you're in a stadium. Obviously Glamorgan is very similar, but Glamorgan's a little bit more flat, and you've got kind of sides on either side that are high, and then you've got the Taff on one end that's not very high. But at Trent Bridge, you're in a stadium, you're in a dome, and that was an amazing feeling. Absolutely loved it. And I remember on that day, I had new spikes with me, and I was trying to work out, do I wear my new spikes? The Pumas are a bit more heavy than my normal Adidas. So I was like, do I wear them or do I not? And I remember that way up. I wasn't too bothered. I wasn't too nervous. I was just thinking about myself and thinking about my things. I had a nice bowl in the morning, had a nice hit in the morning. Just excited. The changing room was lovely. The music was on in the changing room. The boys are just enjoying ourselves. We kind of knew we were underdogs. We knew that they had brought back a couple of players from the 100. We did what we did throughout the competition, and that was just get around each other, have a good morning, no pressure, no nerves, just relax and play. And that's exactly what we did.
Well, you most certainly did. And let's talk about the game itself, because even though I was neutral in this particular game, it was a fantastic game of cricket. It really was. It was worthy of a domestic 50-over final. And Kieran Carlson, 82 from 59 balls, 10 fours, 3 sixes. He was unbelievable on that day, wasn't he?
He was exceptional. And that's exactly what you kind of expect from him, because he's got it in him. He can take the game away from anyone. He's so talented. He's... extremely mentally strong. Nothing would have fazed him that day. He was great to watch. I still watch those highlights of his innings. They come up on Twitter occasionally, and I'm like, yeah, I'll have a look at that. And they're so good to watch. He's a real entertainer and a great player.
He most certainly is. Definitely someone to watch out for, County fans, heading into the next few years. Kieran Carlson. We're talking across formats as well. You know, his first-class average is no joke either. He's a very, very gifted batter indeed. And again, on the flip side, I suppose, aside from the bat in hand, Steve, talking to your bowling, figures of 1 for 18 from 3 overs. And your wicket was massive. Cam Bancroft, who at that moment was looking in impeccable touch, wasn't he? 55, he'd just reached his half-century. And you get the breakthrough. Describe the feeling of that, if you could.
Well, it was a nervous time, put it that way. My palms were definitely sweating. In fact, the back of my palms were sweating when I was bowling, which actually didn't help me at all, because when the back of your palm sweats, it seeps into the inside of your fingers where I'm holding the seam. So then obviously I was, scraping my hand in the dust to try and dry my hands, making them extremely sticky with a bit of moisture and a bit of dirt. So bowling was actually a very, very nervous time for me. And batting wise, I was very calm, very collected. Felt like my decision making was good. Bowling, I was nervous. And that wicket, that wicket was not my finest ball. But you know, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's how you take them. It's not how you take them. It's just that you do take them. So I'll take Cam Bancroft caught deep square any day of the week in a One Day Cup final. I don't mind how they come. So that was, I was a bit like, do I celebrate? Do I not celebrate? Because it wasn't a great ball. So I just enjoyed the moment. I didn't really celebrate too much and just kind of enjoyed everyone else celebrating around it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, you've just delivered a nice golden nugget there of wisdom for any young bowlers out there. It doesn't matter how they come. It really doesn't. You know when you've had a bad day in the fields and you should have got a wicket that you'd take an absolutely terrible delivery, getting your one or two wickets in the next game. It's just the life of a bowler, to be honest. And again, on the scorecard, doesn't say it's a terrible delivery. It just says dismissed by Steve Rheingold, which again must be an incredibly, incredibly satisfying feeling indeed. And in terms of that final wicket, the wicket of Chris Rushworth, bowled by a Glamorgan legend, a man who unfortunately is in his last year in county cricket. We're going to have to get Hogs on before the season does finish. But Michael Hogan, it could not have been more perfect for him to seal the victory for the Welsh County and send the travelling Glamorgan contingent into absolute ecstasy in the stands of Trent Bridge. Steve, this might be difficult to summarise into words, but again, what were the emotions like? As soon as Tom Cullen, that ball nestled into the hands, everyone went up in celebration. What was that moment like?
I ran. I was running. I didn't care where the ball was. I didn't care who was where. I was running. Didn't matter where. Probably the best feeling I've ever experienced, I think. That all of that hard work then, all of that pressure, all of that stress of the tournament, all of that traveling, all of the enjoyment, all of the emotions, that just kind of topped it. It just finished. It was done. It was finished and we won. And it was like, what do I do? So I ran. I just ran. It brilliant. Yeah, I can't even describe it. It's just... I don't know. It was finished and we had won. That was it.
It is a tough question, isn't it? Because it is the indescribable feeling. You can't really put it into words just how special a moment that is. But again, what a massive achievement it was for that set of Glamorgan players. It really was. You can't even over-exaggerate how much it meant to the club and, of course, the fans. The team had not won a trophy in 17 years. 2004, that's a generation of Glamorgan fans who had never seen the team lift a trophy. And then in 2021 at Trent Bridge, a day which will never, ever be forgotten. And for yourself, Steve, that must be quite a special feeling, because for the Glamorgan faithful, you'll always be remembered for that. Is that quite a strange feeling? Has that kind of sunk in? Because I've asked this with the Warwickshire lads who won the championship. I've asked it to Kent players who won the T20 Blast. You've been a part of something which is incredibly special here. How has that sunk in? And how does that feel, I suppose, when we're talking about it a few months afterwards?
Do you know what? It's a very strange feeling, because Matt Maynard, who was watching that day, came up and spoke to me at the end and he said, Steve, I think you're the first non-contracted professional to win a major competition. So I was like, that's interesting. I was on a temporary contract at the time. So I was kind of contracted, but it hasn't really sunk in. I'm not now playing with Glamorgan anymore, which is a shame, but to have that medal, I played one competition and I won it. I played every game. No one, you know, they can take contracts away, but no one can ever take anything. No one can ever take that away from me. So I'm chuffed with it. I've got my medal. I'm still mates with all of the boys. So I'll never forget that. No, never.
Great to hear. It really is, Steve. And one final question about the incredible summer of 2021. And it really was remarkable. Again, I've got a massive grin on my face as I tried to describe it. It was just a fantastic year of county cricket across all three formats. But in terms of initially making that debut, winning the One Day Cup, and making your county championship debut as well in that game against Essex at Sophia Gardens, how would you put the season into your own words? How would you describe your experiences as a Glamorgan cricketer in the summer of 2021?
That question is actually pretty easy to answer. I would say it was a dream come true. That all of my childhood, you know, games as a youngster, training. You know, I remember being at school, probably year seven, year eight, and I would look forward to my T20 in the evening on a Tuesday night at Stanmore. I'd be at school all day thinking about it. I couldn't wait to get home from school and go straight to the club. And last summer, that's exactly what I've dreamed of doing since I was that age, even younger. So absolute dream come true, professional cricket, played a competition, won a competition, and made my first class debut as well. Just a dream come true, that is.
What a way to describe it. Absolutely lovely way of articulating that and putting it into words, to be honest, Steve. Again, it's incredible how life works out, isn't it? I suppose that young boy in London probably wouldn't have been thinking that all these years later that you'd be sat here as a winner of a major domestic tournament here in England and Wales and having that incredible medal and that special day to remember for the rest of your life. It must be absolutely extraordinary. But aside from Glamorgan then, because as we mentioned, no longer contracted with the club, unfortunately, I did want to talk about the mental aspects of the game, because something interesting that yourself and Kieran have put together really in the past few weeks and months is talking mental skills. Now, this is really interesting for me because here on the podcast, we love the psychological aspects of the game. I don't want to sound too cliche, but it really is 90% mental, 10% physical. You can have the best technique in the world. You can be in the best form in the world. You can be the most dominant cricketer to ever grace the planet. But if you're not in the right headspace and the right mental place, you're not going to succeed in this game. It's an incredibly unforgiving environment. So before we touch upon the exact psychological aspects associated with batting, associated with cricket, as a sport, Steve, how did that concept come about in the first place? Why did you two actually create Talking Mental Skills in the first place?
So I studied sports psychology as a master's last year. And I'd recently just finished now in February. In February, I submitted my dissertation. And kind of got speaking to my supervisor about, so I now have to do 2 years of sort of infield training before I can become a qualified sports psychologist. And the term is protected, so I can't call myself a sports psychologist before I become fully qualified. And I said, right, okay, well, I'm not going to start that stage, that process now in the summer, because obviously it's too busy with cricket. So I'll put that off for 6 months and I'll start that in October. So I thought, well, for the time being, it'd be great to grab some experience, do whatever I can to get myself about to start speaking to different people, start working out my philosophies, work out who I am, who I want to be as a sports psychologist. And I saw a great opportunity to sort of brand myself as a mental skills coach. I wrote my dissertation on mental skills in cricket, or on psychological skills in cricket with some of the Glamorgan players. I interviewed them. And what I found, I found it really, really interesting as a topic. So I was like, right, this is perfect. Now, where do I want to go with this? And I was basically, all I want to do is help raise awareness of, or help people be aware of themselves. It's basically spreading self-awareness, to understand your own performance, to understand your strengths, to understand your weaknesses, to understand, you know, goal setting, things as simple as that, to understand things like purposeful practice, you know, not just turning up to a cricket session and then walking home and your dad says to you, what did you learn? And you say, well, nothing. Didn't do it. Like, what would you mean? It was just cricket. And like, that's just, it's so easy to do. And that is how people just cruise and you don't improve. So to create that sort of awareness in kids from a young age, will stand them in good stead when they reach 16, 17, 18, start playing senior cricket. And they actually, you know, people are starting to working out their games at 25, 26, or just, you know, a prime spinner or a prime batter is probably 27, 28 years old. But actually, if we're promoting these mental skills from a younger age, 9, 10, 11, 12 even, people can start working out their games easier. Like, you know, you can start improving from an earlier age, just being slightly more self-aware. I think that's sort of where I want to take this. And Kieran's alongside with me because he loves it. He's been working with, so at Glamorgan, Mark Walton does a lot of work with the boys, and he's brilliant. He is brilliant. And I put Kieran's improvement over the last probably 2 years in county cricket to him. I give him credit because he's, you know, he's worked out his mental space. He's very, very happy with his process now in and around cricket. And you can see his performances have just shot up. So I would put that down to that. So Kieran's obviously very in touch with the mental side. He loves it and he wants to help spread awareness. Obviously, he's got loads of experience in professional cricket and the professional game. So having him alongside me with both knowledge of how he's been through stuff, and how he's got to where he is, as well as his, you know, passion for it as well.
Well, I must say, it's a fascinating platform. It really is. So on the Instagram, I've checked out the conversation with yourself and Kieran. You've had Colin Ingram on as well. And the most recent one was Dean Furman, the captain of Bafana Bafana. But in terms of those mental skills, you mentioned there about from a young age. So let's say for budding cricketers who are 9, 10, 11, 12 years of age, what kind of advice would you give them to put them on the right pathway? What are the mental skills that will put them in the right frame of mind, I suppose, to succeed in the game of cricket?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think to start with, I ask them a question. I say, who's got control in cricket? Who's got control? And they'll say, not sure, really. And I'll say, right, okay, well, if the bowler's got the ball in his hand, right, and the batter is waiting for the bowler to bowl, who's got control? So they'll say, the bowler's got control. So then I'll say to them, how can you go out and bat if you haven't got any control? So batting is completely reactive. The bowler's got all the control and the batter reacts to what the bowler bowls. So how can you then go and bat confidently if you don't know what's coming down at you? You don't know how the bowler is going to bowl. You just have to react. And they say, well, I'm not really sure. I don't really know. How do you go about that then? And I say, well, it's all about having a clear mind when you go out and bat. So if you've worked and you've trained against bowlers, you then develop your game plans, you develop your strengths and your weaknesses. You know that you're a good driver of the ball. So if he bowls it full, you can then drive it and you're good at that. So that's, you know, that's, you're confident in that. So it's all about just reacting to the ball as best you can with a clear mind, not muddling yourself up with nerves or pressure or anything like that, and just reacting. So it's not a case of control, but it's a case of perceived control. You're trying to gain as much control as a batter as you can by preparing well, by creating good game plans, by knowing your strengths, by being clear, by being as confident as you can in those game plans. So it's not, you know, even if you don't have control, you're reacting. It's about that perceived control. How good am I against this bowler? What can I now do? And that's all about being clear-minded and confident in that game plan.
Well, it's fascinating, isn't it? And this is why I love the game of cricket, because there's all these different facets and it is that constant evolutionary arms race, isn't it, between the batter and the bowler. Because I suppose from a bowler's perspective, and again, I'm not a good bowler, don't claim to be, but it's almost the flip side of that. You are trying to have full control. You do not want that batter to dictate the tempo of the game. You want to execute your game plans. You want to control the flow of the game and prevent runs from being scored. So it's interesting, isn't it? The conflicting mindsets of the two archetypes in the game of cricket. And you mentioned there about clarity of mind. And it's such an important thing, isn't it? In particular batting, because unfortunately it's part and parcel of the game. You're going to fail. And you're going to fail a lot more times than you succeed. Steve, you'll know that as an opener. It's part and parcel. It's the nature of the cricketing beast. But for those who are struggling, for those who are in a rough patch, for those who are out of form, I suppose, what advice would you give them to get it back into rhythm and bring back that confidence in order to help them succeed with the bat in hand?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. You know, a lot of it is to do with not looking too far behind, not looking too far ahead, and living kind of in the present moment. So a lot of it is to do with kind of being mindful of where you are, of what you're doing, not looking at performances beforehand. Because if you do let your performance or your last performance affect your next performance, that is when you get into a little rut of form potentially. So it's actually not looking too far behind, not looking too far ahead, and just kind of focusing on the present moment. So if you're training, it's focusing on that training session. What are you getting out of that training session? You can take from the last performance and you can say, right, okay, well, this is what I didn't do so well. This is what I did do well, actually. So I'm going to, you know, I'm happy with that. I'll keep some confidence from that. But actually this is the issue that maybe that's the reason I'm not performing at the moment. So I'm going to train that now. Just focusing on this, not focusing on how I played now. This session is that, you know, this is my target for this session. Nail that. And then you go and you perform. And again, you don't look far behind. You don't look too far ahead. You play each ball as it comes. You know, if you have a three over target, get through three overs, get to 10 runs, get to 15 runs, get to six overs, get to 20 runs. And it's not looking too far ahead. But it's being mindful in the moment, and it's all about kind of staying in control, as we said, or keeping that perceived control up, that your game plan is good, your training was successful, and then you just got to back your instincts in the present moment.
Absolutely. Again, as we keep on mentioning, I suppose, living in the moment, isn't it? And as a cricketer, the one thing that it can trip you up at times is looking too far ahead. The amount of times that we've spoken to players on the podcast, and I usually ask, like, what are your future aspirations, ambitions in the game? And a lot of cricketers do say they have certain goals, but they're not too long-term. It's about game by game. It's about achieving what you can in a sensible time frame, really. Mm-hmm. But we mentioned there about batting, and I would just like to touch upon the bowling as well. I know that so far with the likes of Carlson and Ingram on the show, and with the Instagram content, you've spoken mostly about the batting, and that as an art form. But in terms of a bowler, I suppose I'd ask the exact same question. What are the key mental skills that will produce better performances for bowlers?
I mean, very similar to batting. You know, speaking very generally, because, you know, every individual is different, and everyone will have different plans and different ways to go about their business. But very generally, it's the same. It's having good game plans. It's, you know, if you're training for white ball, it's nailing your Yorkers, nailing your bumpers, nailing your length balls. Red ball, the same, nailing your outswinger, nailing your inswinger, nailing your length. hitting the top of the stumps. And it's about having those behind you. So you've trained all winter, or you've had a training session in the week. You take from that your game plan, and you go and you bowl, and you stay relaxed, and you have that game plan when you need it. So then you adjust to it, and you take each ball as it comes. So you can say, right, okay, well, this ball I'm going to bowl a Yorker, and I've nailed my Yorkers in training, so that's where my confidence comes from. And now I've got to, you know, go clear mind, back yourself. And it's as soon as you start to sort of not trust yourself and not back yourself, where nerves come in, a bit of self-doubt comes in, and that's where performances can go downhill. So for me, it's all about preparing yourself. It's about living in the moment. It's about bowling each ball as it comes. It's about being aware of yourself, or even aware of your self-talk, so that you can, you know, if you're telling yourself in your head, I think I should bowl a bumper this ball, you can sort of have that monologue with yourself and say, is a bumper a good idea? You know, because your instincts do take over and you say, well, I want to bowl a bumper. And maybe it's not the best idea with, you know, deep square leg up. So your mind says, and then you know, if you bowl one without thinking about it, and you go and you're like, why did I do that? So it's actually being more, a little bit more aware of ourselves, of our self-talk as well, and say, right, okay, is a bumper the best idea? No, that's not part of my game plan. Stick with my game plan. I'm going to bowl a Yorker. So it's very similar in terms of being confident, or having a strong game plan, being confident in that game plan. And when you're bowling, it's being clear-minded and sort of being present.
Yet again, coming on to that recurring theme, I suppose, of clarity and being present in the mind. Absolutely. And you mentioned there, and this is something I want to pick up on actually, self-doubts, right? And a lack of clarity. Because in cricket, it is all well and good, isn't it? We can have all of these game plans. We can visualize how we want to execute. But it doesn't always pan out that way. And again, if you have gone through a rough patch, let's say the confidence has dipped, you're going through a poor run of games. In your opinion, Steve, what are the most dangerous traps that a cricketer can fall into when the confidence is a bit low? We've mentioned that self-doubt. We've mentioned the self-talk at times, almost going against your instincts. What would you advise cricketers against doing when the confidence has dipped slightly?
It's a good question. And I think the worst thing we can do is build it up in your own head. I think the best thing you can do is just to talk out loud. You know, if you go home and you speak to someone, doesn't matter who it is, you're speaking to your sister, you're speaking to your brother, speaking to your partner. And you learn yourself, you sort of pick up things of, you know, what might be a good solution, what might the problem be, just by speaking out loud. So obviously I'm there as a person who would love to speak to players. I'm now working with the Cardiff MCCU boys as their sort of assistant coach, and I'm also there as a mental skills coach as well. So I try and have conversations throughout the day. I try and, you know, hi, how are you? What's going on? What are you thinking? And the more you speak, the more you learn, you pick up things by yourself. You're like, oh God, yeah, I am in a bit of a mood actually. What, you know, why am I in a mood? That's ridiculous. I shouldn't be in a mood. I should be, you know, enjoying cricket. And you just sort of, the worst thing you can do is not speak, let it build up in your head, and your performances is just going to go downhill. You know, you'd be very lucky to sort of get out of that rut or play well when your self-doubt is high. So I think speaking out loud is, you know, speaking to anyone, speaking to the coach. If you need clarity, go and speak to the coach and say, coach, you know, what do you think about my shot there? Was it a good option? And you start to learn, oh, right, maybe that's, you know, maybe I'll put that shot away for a while. That's not part of my game plan. I'm not, you know, or I'll go and train it and become better at it. So it's kind of working out what that game plan is, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, what your training is like, if you're just hitting balls or if you're training for a purpose. You know, you see it so often guys rock up in the morning and they'll go and hit a few balls. They hit some underarms or some overarms. And it's like, well, what are you getting out of that? What are you getting? And I always say the reason that I hit in the morning is for a bit of timing and for some weight transfer. And that is it. So I can face six balls. And if I feel my timing is good and my weight's getting through the ball, I'll leave. That's me done. I'm happy with that. You see guys, they hit for 10, 15 minutes in the morning. For what? For no reason. What are you hitting balls for? Unless you've got a good reason as to, you know, maybe you want to feel in when you're in the nets or... but it's everyone kind of needs to work out what their process is. And that's what the pros do so well. A lot of the professionals, they know their games. They know what they do in the morning. They know why they do it. And they know that it's good prep for them in their games. So for me, it's sort of getting people into good habits, but getting people understanding why they're doing things, not just training, not just, you know, building things up in your head, but it's working things out, whether that be with the coach, whether that be with a mental skills coach, sports psychologist, or whether it be with your brother, sister, partner. It's speaking out loud. It's working things out for yourself and becoming more self-aware.
It's fantastic advice. It really is. And not just for cricket, but for wider life in general, isn't it? It is that art of communication. And as we all know, it's so important when you are feeling down, when you do feel like things are going against you, you do need to speak out about it. Obviously, with someone that you can confide in and trust, whether that is a coach, a teammate, family member, a friend, whoever. That's a really, really important lesson to take away from today's podcast. And you mentioned there about the focus styles of training as well. And you mentioned about how the pros make it so easy. That is what distinguishes them from the rest, isn't it? It's the fact that they know the player that they are and they're comfortable in that. But it's also about putting in the right steps, the processes to make sure that they can excel in being the cricketer that they can be. And that is why we see the likes of Virat Kohli, Kane Williamson, Babar Azam, Joe Root, Steve Smith, all of these incredible cricketers. That's why we see them succeed, because they know exactly what they need to do in order to succeed. They have that self-awareness, they have that confidence, that desire, that drive, that ability. And it is so interesting, isn't it, Steve? To be honest, we could talk about this for absolutely hours. We might have to get you on for part two, actually, later on in the season, to just talk about the psychological aspects associated with cricket. But aside from cricket itself, and this is quite a poignant question, actually, as almost a wrap-up for the podcast, but aside from the game itself and outside of cricket, what would you say has been the biggest life lesson that you have learnt from your time working in mental skills? Is there any particular lesson that you can take away from your time learning about this particular subject?
The first thing that comes to mind there, just in everyday life, is, you know, I've said it quite a lot over the last sort of 15 minutes or so, but it's literally living in the moment, being present, living in the now, enjoying every minute. You know, life's too short to be thinking about what's just happened or you know, what's happening in a month's time. Because you start to build up nerves and you start to build up things in your head that might potentially not be there. And then you start missing out on what you're actually doing. You know, it's sort of being mindful of where you are in the present. You know, if you're scrolling through Instagram for no reason, you know, put your phone down for a minute. I was listening to a podcast the other day and they said you should be doing 20 minutes of mindfulness a day. And mindfulness might just be, you know, having a long shower. You know, why do people have so many shower moments? You know, when you have a light bulb moment in the shower, and that's because you're listening to yourself. You are literally having a monologue with yourself and you're aware of it. You're present. You're relaxed, you're chilled, and it's not a surprise that that is a good place where people start to understand themselves and maybe pick up a gem or two of good thought. And it's a good example of mindfulness. You know, it's putting your phone down for 20 minutes and sort of just living, just being there, just listening to yourself, listening to your thoughts. You know, if you're in the car, turn the radio down for 5 minutes and just sort of be present. That's probably the one thing that has stood out to me while I've been researching and learning, but also teaching others, coaching others, is just sort of being more aware of your surroundings and living in the present.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, it's great advice. It really is. And I just go back to that debut that you mentioned for Glamorgan, and you mentioned about the helmets, the one-day shirt, the one-day trousers. Something else which is important, isn't it? Enjoying the little things. Because life can get tough at times. We all know this, but it's all about taking those small victories, those small moments which make your day a bit better. And I think that's a really important thing to take away again from today's recording of the Counter Cricket Podcast. But Steve, we are approaching the end of what has been a thoroughly, thoroughly fascinating episode of TCCP. I've loved every single moment of it, to be honest. But before we say our final goodbyes, where can we find Talking Mental Skills? For those out there who want to learn a bit more about it, who want to listen to yourself and Kieran talk with guests like Colin Ingram and Dean Furman, where can we find the platform and what can we expect from the platform heading into the rest of 2022?
Yeah, great. We're on Instagram at Talking Mental Skills. We're on YouTube. You can search Talking Mental Skills there, and our three episodes for the time being will be there. We're also on Spotify if you prefer to listen. All of our podcasts are up there. We're also on TikTok. If you fancy, you know, quick snippets of a couple of, you know, minute videos of each interview. And the next few weeks, we're lining up different athletes from different sports to be able to just learn more about different sports, learn more about people's journeys, share their experiences, learn from their experiences. And on the other side of that, we've got, you know, we like to pick up some topics. We'll do a reading of a topic, or we'll listen to a podcast, or, you know, we'll collect some knowledge, or we'll just go from experience, write some notes down, make it into a post, and put it up there. For example, like a tips on self-talk or something like that. So there's a bit of information there as well. Just if you can pick up a gem or two from there, that's great. Otherwise, it'll be those podcasts, the videos, the vodcasts, if you like. Just to sort of share experience.
Well, Steve, we'll be leaving the links to Talking Mental Skills in the podcast description below. So listeners, if you want to go and check out the work that both Steve and Kieran are doing with that wonderful platform, you can find that using the links below. But Steve Rheingold, that basically brings us to an end to today's episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast. All that's left for me to say, of course, is thank you very much for coming on today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Time has absolutely flown by. And you're always welcome back here on TCCP at some point in the future. But listeners, that is it from us too for today's episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast. To each and every single one of you who's tuned in, thank you once again. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.